What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Chewy Doo Podcast YouTube Live. We are back, and I know what you're saying. Who is the beautiful young lady sitting next to you? This is my niece, Ella Rose.
Hi.
She came down to visit. As you saw the last episode, we had her and her friend in here talking about Texas Tech. So she's coming here. She said, I want to be the podcast one time deal.
But as a co-host for today's episode.
Yeah, just for today's episode. So don't get carried away, guys. Don't get carried away. Maybe she'll come back again later on.
When she comes back.
But we have a special guest with us today, and I can't wait to get to it. Unfortunately, Chew's not here today, but he will be here next week on Tuesday when we interview Stephanie Nadalny, voice actor for Kid Goku. She will be video interviewed next week on Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. But let's get going. You ready?
Yes, I'm
ready.
Let's
rock and roll. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Chewy Doo Podcast. We are here today on a special occasion. First of all, because we're going live on YouTube, and it's been a while now that we got associated as being an actual channel now. This is freaking awesome. But today in the podcast, ladies and gentlemen, he's been on the podcast twice. It'll be his third time. Good friend of the podcast, Mr. Abel Gonzalez del Toro in the podcast with us. What's up, baby?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me for my third time.
That's right.
Every time I get here, we've got a new studio, so hopefully the fourth time, you know, we'll be in New York or Austin.
Oh, shit. Oh,
I go big.
All right, well,
I dream big, man. I dream big. I work hard. I like to consider myself a writer-director. Uh-huh. And so I started writing scripts, and then I realized that's not all it takes.
Yeah, no kidding. And all that, I mean, glad to have you back again, once again, on our podcast, man. We have jumped from podcast to studio to studio, but I think we officially got our home here, and we got a good equipment right now. We actually are running live on what we're going to do for those guys that you guys are watching on Facebook. Make sure you're tuned to the YouTube channel now, because we won't be going Facebook Live anymore. It's going to be YouTube Live now, so we have a home set and ready to go. But we'll talk more about that later on down the line on the podcast. But Abel, let's rewind back a little history of you. I know there might be some new people watching right now that want to know everything about you. So let's start from the top, and let's get to know you all over again. Introduce yourself from the very beginning. Let's go.
All right. My name's Abel Gonzalez del Toro. That's my stage name. I do some acting, some writing, some producing. And so I created a company called Axiom Films. And when you listen to these pundits about writing and film and stuff, they say, find your voice. So you find your voice and you'll have a message and then you'll get noticed. Well, being a minority, being in a demographic that's, you know, it doesn't matter to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Not only do you have to be your voice, you also have to be your marketer.
Right.
Not only do you have to be your marketer, you have to be your financier. So what I did was I took a step back from the actual filmmaking to learn how to produce.
Okay.
I invested my own money into hiring a manager, hiring a line producer, and learning the steps that it takes to be a union signatory. That means basically I'm a certified employer for any movie star out there that I could bring down and get into a deal with.
There you go.
So what makes a movie popular? Now we're talking about algorithms and thumbnails. Because let's face it, we're not going to get a movie into a theater. So our first step as independent filmmakers is to get on a streaming platform. We can get on Tubi, on Amazon, or you know, Hulu. But what drives traffic to a title is its thumbnail and the algorithm.
Right.
So first of all, you gotta get recognizable names in that thumbnail. Mm-hmm. And the recognizable names are all union actors. Mm-hmm. And so that's where that idea came from. Let me learn the business. I went out to LA to meet showrunners and producers. I entered film festivals. And that's where the idea came to make a movie that has at least three known Hollywood actors in the Valley with a complete cast of production team and supporting actors that are from the Valley that would get paid. My mission is to make an industry in the Valley where actors and production people, writers, musicians, because music is so much as much a part of a movie as the writing is.
Right.
You know, if you don't think that is true, look up how many times Rolling Stones have been used in a movie. Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
You know, all those songs, you hear them over and over.
Right.
And they dictate the theme and the pacing of the movie. Mm-hmm. So I got a kid that's willing to score my movie, plays several instruments, writes and reads sheet music, but he's never done anything professional in music.
Okay, I got you.
You know, there's no outlet for him.
Right.
You know? So I said, I'm going to teach you, not that I know, but we'll figure it out together, how to score my movie with a violin.
Right.
You know, I wanted to have this kind of, you know, similar to No Country for Old Men or Hell or High Water. I don't know if you've seen those movies.
No, I haven't seen, but I have seen Old Country for Old Men.
It's very, you know, it's not urban. It's not out in the bustling metro areas. It's very, you know, one-lane blacktops out in the country. Because that's what we got. I mean, that's what we have at our disposition. Mm-hmm. So this next movie is called The Strong Side. It's about a gentleman who comes from another area, and they give him a scholarship plus a bribe to play. He's a five-star recruit.
Okay.
He comes to this fictional little town.
Blue chipper, pretty much.
A blue chipper.
Yeah.
And he comes to this town where they've never won anything. And they want to win. And they got the money, but it's not, per se, legal money, you know.
Is this kind of prior to, I mean, I hate to bring old news and bad news or anything, but this is prior to back when, and this is going way back to Hurricane Katrina, at one time where a lot of these players were from Louisiana, transferred to San Antonio, and there was actual coaches that were trying to get some of these players to come to their schools as blue, like the way you're saying, blue chip players. Is you're going in that kind of format?
Yeah, it was way before the NIL deal. The NIL basically lets college players get paid now. They can be on a video game. They can get an endorsement deal. Some of these players make more money with the NIL deals. There's one quarterback in Michigan, I think he's holding out for $10 million.
Jeez.
You know, and rookies, Shedeur Sanders signed a deal today for 4 years, $4.6 million.
Right.
And he probably made $20 million in NIL. You know, but it's the next step for him, so he has to take it. So in this story, the guy takes the money to come down here, a couple of them, and it's got Bagman and this crooked cartel family that's behind in the woodworks, in the weeds.
Siempre cartel de chingos.
But we're actually not going to use the word cartel, because it turns a lot of people off.
Right, right.
I'm a businessman. If it comes down to making a movie and not, I would rather take the word out. But it's basically what some politicians called, the way they depicted the Valley in the news, where the politics, that you know, that there's drug dealers on every corner and child trafficking everywhere,
right.
The bad hombres, you know who I'm talking about,
without
saying names.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're going to give them what they want. In this fictional world, that stuff happens all the time.
Right.
And this guy gets involved in it. But before he gets his back against the wall, he really enjoys that. He's from a small farm town in Maryland. And he enjoys, you know, the ladies and the parties and all that.
Right, right, right.
He runs out of money and he asks for more. So he has to do something for that family.
Exactly.
That gets him in trouble. He gets kicked off the team.
Right.
And then flash forward 20 years later, he's a washed up personal trainer. And he gets in trouble with the family again. It's like this ongoing thing where he's just a stranger in a strange land. He's got his back against the wall, and he's got to fight his way out.
Right.
You know?
Right. And like I said, it kind of goes back to the whole thing we were talking about the Hurricane Katrina thing. And a lot of families move from Louisiana to the Houston area, to the Dallas, San Antonio, Austin area, just to get their kids, you know, back to school. But some of these coaches, I mean, this is through what I've read, and that's what I've seen, or, you know, that I read in the paper and stuff like that, that some coaches were caught blue chipping some of these kids into their district so they can use them as, I guess, secret weapons.
To start winning.
Like that movie Benchwarmers where the guy's like, I am 12, but he was like a grown man.
Yes,
like,
yes.
Playing with these kids.
Yeah,
It was very commonplace to have people. You see it in high school. There's some coaches that they hint to a kid that they could possibly make that team, and the parents will pick up and move into that.
Yes, yeah, I got
it. Happens a lot upstate. Happens a lot, yeah. You know, here we don't have that kind of thing because nobody wants it.
No offense to any high school players out there.
maybe, like, well, in soccer and in baseball, our frame, I say ours because I'm assuming that most kids are Hispanic American. Baseball teams do really well, soccer teams do really well.
Yeah.
You know, we have. Lady Panthers softball team from last year.
State champions.
Ended up on ESPN. And sometimes I put on that YouTube clip when I'm down and I need to get motivated.
Yeah.
Because why not us? I don't know any of them personally.
Yeah.
No footage. I was born here in West.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
But I lived in Calchosa. I went to school there. You know? Mm-hmm. But to see those ladies, and they didn't give up.
No,
they had their graduation on the field the week before, the day before, and they missed out on all of that stuff.
But they were in state. That's the thing. Yeah.
Well, 2 years before, or was it, it was 2 or 3 years before, Ilango went first in state for soccer.
Yeah.
And that same year, with 5A, Sherry and I got second place.
They both went up there.
Yeah, they both went up there, and we had New Valley.
Yeah. And I still remember that game. I was watching bits and pieces of that game. And I had Coach Stroman on the podcast. He said he was there, and he had gotten a phone call from the UIL office. He said, you know, this is the last inning. You know, the score was like, it was like 9-3, or I don't know what the score was. Something like that. And they started getting the girls ready, line them up so we can give them their second place trophy, blah, 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 blah. It's like, okay. And then all of a sudden you saw one run come in. And then another one. And another. And then the bases were loaded. I mean, what? There's got to be somebody out there, out in the valley right now, trying to piece this together. Because to be in the bottom of the, I don't know what inning it was, already two outs. I mean, one out, two outs, how many outs? The bases are loaded. You're up to bat. The first pitch comes in. Poof! Gone. Grand slam. The game is over. A shock.
It was cinematic.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful. People were jumping over fences into the yard. It was crazy, man. You know, and what we're talking about before we go any further, before we're talking about as far as you being a screenwriter and a director itself, as far as starting from scratch, because I, like you asked me if I got any schooling for this, for a podcast, and I go, no, basically it was a musician and just fell into my lap and started doing it. For yourself, did you want to go to school for this, or you say, you know what, I'm just going for it?
I've always wanted to be a writer. I had a fascination with books, but I also have this attention deficit disorder.
Okay.
So if I start reading a book, I'll start creating the ending instead of reading the book, right. And I'll flip through 4 or 5 pages, and I'll have to go back and read it again. And I go, that never happened in the book. My version's better. So let me write it down. I've always dreamed big. I've been a daydreamer. I would get in trouble at school for not paying attention.
Oh.
But they would put a standardized test in front of me, and I'd score in the 98th percentile. And the nerds back in school would say, how did you do that? You can't even spell. And I'm like, it's because my brain thinks different. I can't sit down and learn the way you guys do.
Right.
You know, I was always fidgeting, and they didn't know what it was back then.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I went to college, and I took Composition 1. I said, this is where I was writing my first screenplay in 1996 and going to college and taking Comp 1. And I got my essay back from the teacher, and there was 35 mistakes for basic grammar, like commas and apostrophes. And she wrote in the top, she's like, Wayne, why can't you learn how to use a comma? But this is very imaginative.
But you read it, right? You read it?
You understood it.
She literally said it in front of class. She came in frustrated one day and she said, there's a guy here in this class, we won't say his name, has the potential to be a great writer, but it's like he didn't go to school for like this whole life.
Punctuation.
He doesn't know punctuation. And I've always needed a scribe to tell, hey, you know, like how the pharaohs would just say, let it be written, let it be said. You know?
You're right.
I just command, you write it down. It's your job to write it down for me.
So you need,
I'll say it and you just write it down.
Yeah. So what you're saying right now is you need somebody walking with you at a pretty much 90% of the day. Write this down.
Well, we have the
I know. Yeah. Here's
so,
my secretary.
So I wrote this script, right? I wrote this script. I've been writing it in my head for years. I was a personal trainer before I put all this weight on. And I had an idea. I would go to Guadalajara every year and I'd work out over there. And I'd see the ladies and I was like, these ladies are beautiful. But they won't even look at guys. They must have a husband, you know, boyfriends or whatever. They're just there to do their workout.
Right.
And I said, imagine if a thug, mobster, whatever, got into his head that the trainer was messing around with his wife, whether it was true
right,
or not.
Right.
What would he do to that guy? Oh, and so I've been writing this story in my mind for years.
And she was asking me, what kind of movies he does? Oh, they're pretty graphic. They're pretty graphic.
Well, I've done movies for other people.
Right.
The movies that I've written are crime dramas.
Right.
My favorite movies are The Godfather, Wizard of Oz, and... you know, the third one always changes. Sometimes it's Pulp Fiction, and sometimes it's like Casino. You know, depending on how I feel. But what it is that I write about is morality. You know, a man's moral compass. When I say man, I don't mean man. You know, you've seen that movie with the Hustle and Flow. He's talking about. When I say man, I don't mean man versus woman. I say as a collective, there's something that we will do to get ahead. And there's things that we won't do. But yet, people will justify breaking the law if it's for their family, if it's to get ahead, if it's to, like, maybe get grandma that surgery she needs. It's
pretty much, you know? Like survival of the fittest, is what you're saying. Yeah.
So that's my fascination. Like, The Sopranos is one of my favorite, all-time favorite shows. And it's a tale of morality. It's like this guy would do, he tried to kill his own mother. He tried to do a lot of things. Family members weren't safe because he had to, the business was first, you know. The family second. His immediate family was second. And so that's the kind of stories that I write about, you know, because unfortunately we live in a very impoverished area. And you'll see people do things that they shouldn't.
Right, you know? Right.
And you know who I'm talking about. Without saying any names, you know, you see it on the news all the time, and you see a house in the middle of farm country that's got five foreign cars and stuff, and nobody works.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know what I mean? But that's my fascination. Is how can a man talk himself into that? He could easily talk himself into being good, but what makes you say, you know what? If I go to prison, so what?
Have you been stalking me, man? You can drive by my house again, Abel.
Yeah.
I told you about this, man. I knew I recognized that car.
If you look and dissect all the best shows, arguably the three best shows on a series that ever been made, in no order, are The Wire, Sopranos, and Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Three best series of all time. And they're all about the same thing.
Yep.
What a person or a society would do to get over on somebody else.
I won't lie to you, man. I've really got into watching, my wife and I actually sat through the whole little, actually I did because I just kept going without her watching it, but I got into Landman.
Madman
is like, and another one that I just finished was Tulsa King. I'm like, damn, these are great series, man.
Yeah. All of the directors. Why do I draw? Sometimes I just draw a blank. Taylor Sheridan. All of Taylor Sheridan's stuff is very similar to what I pick up on his themes that he has. Mm. He wrote for Sons of Anarchy. Yeah. He was a sheriff on there.
Yeah, yeah.
He did Hell or High Water. He did a lot of stuff that's morally ambiguous. I hope I used that word right. But, you know, it's real easy in this political climate to blame people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's human nature, right?
Right.
I'm pretty sure you have Republican and Democratic fans, and it's like they divided us by who's just and who's not.
Right.
Like, this party says, well, these are all freeloading criminals. And the other party says, well, they're a bunch of rich people that are just using everybody else. You know?
Right.
So, like, it's the same thing. It's a person's desire to survive. It's kind of convoluted, you know, because capitalism, you know, we have that yearning and to be rich.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. I had a conversation with a girl that wanted to produce with me, and she said, I want to be famous. And shout out to Valente Rodriguez. He was on a podcast, and he said, you don't want to be famous. You want to be talented, you want to put in the work, but fame is not what you think it is. It like, made me think. I was like, I don't want to be famous. I want to tell stories.
Right.
You know, I want to live comfortably doing something that I love.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to help others do the same. There's a lot of talent in this town. In this town alone, there's a lot of talent. The Willen and Westaco Festival is right down the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just had their April shows. Man, next year you guys got to participate. You got to bring them on. My buddy Rolando Martinez, he runs that. He is like a thespian. He's going to be in my movie. He went to school for acting. He knows Shakespeare inside and out.
Oh, shit.
I always get this wrong, but there's like a degree. Like, it's a doctorate in the arts. FMLA, FMA,
okay.
Or FDA. I don't know. You're a constant.
Wrong field.
No, but it's like, it's like a doctorate in the arts. And
right.
This guy has that for acting. Unless I was drunk. But he went to school.
That's what you say, Wade.
And I was like, he's so talented, man. He's my buddy, and we just connected. I only known him for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of plays, like 6 or 7 plays. And the thing with plays that's different than film, because I know Joshua was talking about his first documentary took him 2 years to make.
Mm-hmm.
That's why people give up. 2 years to get the satisfaction and the accolades of somebody watching it.
Right.
Let's be honest. That's why you make a film, for somebody to watch it.
Exactly.
Then
exactly.
For somebody to like it. Then eventually for somebody to praise it.
Mm-hmm.
And give you awards. And they make fun of me because I use my arms a lot.
It's all good, man. I do it too.
What am I supposed to do with my arms? Like, thank you, Bobby.
I'm sorry. I'm playing it right now.
And so the beautiful thing about plays is you rehearse 2-3 months and you get to perform it. And you see the audience's reaction.
Right.
You see what works and doesn't work, and then you change it up. And say you do 8 performances at play, and you can make it different every time.
Every single time.
I'm gonna tell you a funny story. Well, it's funny to me. And it's funny now.
All right.
It wasn't funny when it happened.
Yeah, I got you. I got a lot of those, Jerry. Well,
I was the male lead for the Far Community Theater. Shout out to Pedro Garcia, my acting coach.
There you go.
He's at Far Community Theater. And so I didn't know anything about acting. I took a class about writing, and my teacher asked him, hey man, I saw you do other classes for like nailing a cold read and a rehearsal and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I go, I'm gonna audition. I think I'm gonna do it, man. I saw it in Facebook. I want to audition. He goes, come by Thursday, sit in on the audition class, and we'll show you how to go into an audition. It's a cold read. That means you don't get to rehearse the lines before they tell you, here's the paper, here's your direction, this is what you're trying to achieve in this scene.
Oh, crap. Okay.
Boom. You got to do it.
Right.
And so my first time I auditioned for the Far Community Theater, they gave me a role in the room. And he said not to tell anybody. I just did. So...
Cats out of the bag, people.
I did that play, and I saw my parents come see me, and my parents had never been, like, really against the theater movie thing, but they've always been very supportive, you know, and an article came out in the paper, and my dad clipped it and put it there in the scrapbook and stuff.
Right, right.
But to watch them watch me perform, and it was amazing. So... They gave me...
I was going to ask you something. When your parents watched you... Oh, you know what? I'm going to put the camera on me here. When your parents watched you on stage and you did your performance, did they like sit up and like, yeah, this is mijo or anything like that?
My mom did. My dad's very stern and quiet.
Okay.
Like, now that we're older, we talk and we'll chill out. Like, the last 4 days we've worked on, he has a little shop behind his house, and I'll go over and have a beer with him before dinner and some stuff for me. I have a barbecue pit, a smoker. Well, they do all kinds of, you know, odds and ends and stuff. And he's just, he cracked a little smile, but that one was a very family oriented play. So I got offered the lead role in a very dark drama.
Okay.
Called Come Back Little Sheba.
Okay.
So it's about a doctor, an alcoholic doctor in the 50s that loses everything, and he has to take in a tenant to pay the bills. So he's got an extra room, and it's a beautiful college co-ed, and he just starts thinking, man, my wife's just, it's all her fault. You know, she never had a kid for me, she never supported me, she's not there for me emotionally. Uh-huh. The dog was Sheba. The dog ran away. That's how bad this woman was. You know?
Okay.
So the name of the play is Come Back Little Sheba. Mm-hmm. She's always in a robe and with her curlers in her hair.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's trying to stay clean. And he sees this college co-ed and he just gets an idea. He's like, man, if I could start all over again with a beautiful girl like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know how old men think? They think they put the shoe polish in their beard and they can attract a young girl.
Like hair dye and everything.
Yeah. They're out there at the club with their starched Levi's. this is the play over the back. And I'm playing this guy that's a recovering alcoholic. And I gotta say the alcoholic's prayer, you know? I don't know if you've ever heard it.
Yes, I have heard it before.
And so I'm here, man, and I'm watching this thing unfold, and the milkman's hitting on my wife, and she gets a kick out of it, and then the co-ed's bringing in guys into the house, and I'm losing my mind. It's like, why does everybody not, like, help me?
Right,
like,
right.
I'm losing my stuff here. What's my shit? Right?
Yeah.
And so one day, the college co-ed's fiance comes to town, or he proposes to her, and he's gonna take her away and marry her, and they're gonna have this picturesque life with a white picket fence because the guy made it. Now she doesn't gotta go to school, and sets me off, my character, on a bender, and I don't come back for like 2 days. And I don't come back, and I'm still wearing the same clothes from 2 days ago, and my breakfast is on the table, and I might as well have had a wife beater on because that lady would open her mouth and I, you know, it would just set him off.
Right, right.
And so she comes and she gets in his face and she goes, why'd you do it? And I slam the plates and flip the table over and they're still mad at me about that.
Like, I just really got into character.
Chicken. Yeah, it was our last performance. Chicken went flying everywhere and stuff.
Eagle night!
And the crew and the cast would feed off that energy and they're like, next time, do this. And I'm like, don't tell me. Worry about your own character.
Right, let me do
it. I got something in the back of my mind. Right. I was a table flip. Well, I wouldn't let them in, you know?
Yeah.
So they pulled a prank on me. There's a scene where I flip over the table, I throw the food, I go to the cabinet and I pull out a hatchet and I run around trying to kill her.
Uh-huh.
It's very dark.
Right, right, right.
And they hid the hatchet and they put a big old 357 Magnum plastic like that. I'm like, that's why not everybody is. I go, I look, and it's not there, and I had to improvise. I'm going to get you, you heifer, because that was part of the
right, right.
Look back, and I saw it, and I had to reach it again. I got a Charlie horse in my thing, and I was like, oh, man, it was real. The pain was real, because I pulled my shoulder trying to get that thing out.
Yeah.
I run around, and she subdues me, because I'm still drunk.
Right.
Calls my AA sponsor, and they take me away, and then they bring me back, and the cycle starts all over again.
Right.
But I'm telling these guys, because just because some of you guys need to understand storytelling. Mm-hmm. You know, if I had a gun, I wouldn't need to chase it.
Exactly. Exactly.
I can shoot it from the table.
That's what I was saying.
You thinking right now. 3 pages of my dialogue.
You're like, what? What?
So
what?
Why doesn't he just
that's the beauty
shoot
of
her?
That's the beauty of theater arts.
Yeah, man. And the reason I bring up that about your parents sitting out, mijo, good show. They go, it takes me back to my sixth grade year. Theater arts, they were having a talent show, and the theater art teacher told me and a buddy of mine, I want you guys to host a show. They go, yeah, sure. Well, you know, we've got a little bit of comedy, whatever. We're kids. We don't know what comedy is, man. But anyways, in the middle of the program, the teacher goes, my DR teacher, I want you to sing. I want you to go up and sing in front of, you know, the people that are going to be there. Okay. Well, the auditorium, big auditorium, a lot of people came. Thinking, a lot of people, everybody, it filled up. There were people standing in the back.
They always come to the talent show.
I know. They always go to the talent show. So,
the award ceremonies, nobody comes.
Yeah, the talent shows, yes. So I'm standing there, and they announced me, they go, now up, Mr. Mark Velasquez is going to sing Richie Valens, O'Donna. So I'm like up there in front of the microphone ready to sing. And I see my parents, bro. I see my parents in the back row. Here's what you do. They sink down to the bottom of their seats. I'm all like, are you for real? Oh, we're going there. So I do my singing performance. I get a standing ovation. And then you see them, ese es mi hijo, ese es mi hijo. Really? Really?
After
yeah.
They just like started fighting.
Yeah. Like, oh my God. Preparing for the
exactly, dude. So I'm like, you know what? Never again.
You're about to walk out, and then they heard your voice. They're remaking La Bamba, you know that, right?
I heard about that.
It's a couple of producers from the Valley. They just did Rosario, just came out about two weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And they were here, they were touring, they were doing like the theatrical release tour, they did a couple of shows. Mm-hmm. And the film festival did a Sunday night showing of that movie at the Carmike. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Carmike. And they were involved, I think, with the golf movie, The Long Game.
Okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, those guys are they're there, man. Similar to what I want to do, you know, but what I want to do is I want to help everybody. I want it to be local, as much local as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, cameramen, mic, you know, boom operators, makeup people, as many people to get that training and to get that, you know, payment. You know, they should be rewarded for their work.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Well, let's take a quick time out. We're going to say thank you to our sponsors right now. Big shout out to Triple J Plumbing, area code 956-854-9622. Call Juan or Jerry at 956-478-5316. Guys, they do residential plumbing. There are hospital grade plumbers also. I've been getting a lot of people coming in asking for water heater repairs. These guys do it too, man. Reach out to them. Let them know Chewing Who sent you. They're great guys. If they're busy, keep calling. They will get back to you. But always remember, your crap is their bread and butter. Also, a big shout out to Anotis Construction. Give Tony a call, 956-363-7195. Great craftsmanship. They do residential, commercial. They do renovations, remodel. Great guys. They've been doing a lot of great stuff. Actually, not just here in the Valley, but up north of Texas. The last I heard, they are working on some subdivisions over in Mission at the moment, if I'm not mistaken. And they're doing wonders right now. So keep them in mind, guys. If you ever need a great construction company to get you a contractor to get you going, these are the guys you want on your side. Also, just to give you a heads up, and I know if you see Miss Ella Rose over here wearing the cat. Let them know, Ella.
Don't forget to buy the Chew and Ooh merchandise. Buy caps, t-shirts, and cups.
Cups soon. Coming soon. Coming soon, we'll have the cups. We're getting cups. Go ahead. But that right there, that QR code that's on the screen, that is straight to our Facebook page. If you want to be a member, click on that bad boy, join the membership club. Those where we're going to be actually showing all our episodes that are shown on YouTube, they'll be posted on Facebook the following day, only for members only. But if you want to watch it on YouTube, come over to our channel, push subscribe, hit the button, bell button, make sure you get it every single time we come on live. And on top of that, we do have membership on our YouTube channel also for great little, I guess they're called like memes or gifs or little icons, yes, and all that good stuff. You know, this is why I have her here.
to get the Gen Z audience.
You see, look at that. I know you're saying, bring her again. But I'm just glad everything's working out right now for the pod, man. Everything's going great. And that's thanks to everybody who watches the show. Thank you so much. But coming back to Mr. Gonzalez Del Toro here. We're talking about, we said we started from scratch, you know, from the very beginning. You wanted to do all that great stuff. But you say it's harder down here in the valley. There's a thing we call, what was that word you used?
I got to patent it first. I can't just give it to
you. Oh,
me.
Just do it.
I call it valleyitis. You know, it's like a crab in a bucket mentality. Nobody can help each other.
Right.
You know, get up there.
Right.
There's so many people out there doing really good stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, Hugo Rodriguez got that movie on Amazon and Tubi called Find Me. Mm-hmm. The guys in Brownsville, they're doing their thing with El Llorón, and they had Valencia Rodriguez in that one. We got A.R. Rodriguez, the war, I think it is. They got a couple of movies on Amazon Prime. We just gotta keep pushing and tell our stories, you know. There's a lot of stories that get whitewashed. Mm-hmm. You know, our history isn't told. I don't know if you've heard the trend on Instagram, or what's coming up is that the African American community is questioning where were the Mexican Americans during the Civil Rights Movement.
Right.
You know, they're saying like that we sat it out. Well, we didn't sit it out.
We
live in areas where nobody cared.
Exactly.
We had civil rights leaders. Mm-hmm. You know, we had walkouts for segregated schools. My mom was in the Gachosa when they had the segregation.
Really?
It's very small instances where the national spotlight hit down here. You know, you had the unions. And that goes back to what the stuff that Joshua was talking about last week about. And he's going on talking about on his Facebook about the contamination everywhere. Well, why do you think there's so much contamination? Is because we're surrounded by agriculture. Mm-hmm. And my dad tells me all the time, is like, you shouldn't be fishing in those ditches because that's runoff. And what goes in that, it's all pesticides and chemicals.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I was thinking about what to say about that because I was listening to last week's episode, mm-hmm, and all the stuff that's in the fish and all these things in the environment. And on cue, a crop duster, you could hear it. I live in Monte Alto.
Bro, keep going. Yeah, go. I hear you.
And
they
fly over the town to circle around. And if the wind hits you just right, you'll get that into your house.
Exactly.
You know? And then people wonder why we get cancer at a higher rate.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
There should be a moratorium or a certain no-fly zone around communities.
Right.
You know, if you can do it out there, that's fine. You know, there's all that space. But there's some of these subdivisions that have a field right next to it, mm-hmm, and there's no rules against spraying that field.
Right.
I mean, they'll even, like, duck under the telephone poles and do loop-de-loops and then go back down.
Yes, I've seen that.
You know?
I've seen that,
And so, there's a story, there was an article yesterday, a national article, about arsenic in our rice.
Really?
The best thing about this age is information.
Exactly.
But it's also the worst thing because we just dismiss it. We go right through it. Mm-hmm. Where is the disgust and the anger that there's arsenic in our rice on shelves, and who do we hold accountable? You know? Mm-hmm. We just let that pass.
Right.
You know? Our water's bad.
Yeah.
You know? Our meals are bad too. You know? This country used to plant a lot of vegetables and fruit.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, you have to pump them full of pesticides just to get, you know, get something out of it.
Right, right.
Because,
right.
You know, I did a lot of agriculture when I was a kid. My uncle, Nere Toro, mm-hmm. he passed away. He had cancer in his back and all that stuff. And we did a lot. We worked with a lot of pesticides, man. You know, so that's in the back of my mind. I had a colonoscopy 2 weeks ago. They found precancerous polyps in my intestines.
Wow.
You know, if nobody's looking, you're not going to find anything. And
right.
I went through that because I've been having a lot of gastric problems. Right? Mm-hmm. And so they also found some stuff in my throat. And I'm like, man, if they look in my back or maybe look into my cells, there's other stuff. But
right.
We got to find out.
Right, 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 right.
What's out there?
Right.
You know? What was your last meal? What did you have? What was the last thing that you had?
A corn dog, bro.
That's what
it's
I
so
had.
Convenient.
Yeah.
It's so convenient. Yeah. Well, before I became a filmmaker, I was in another field. Mm-hmm. And I was constantly on the road. I would go from one clinic to the other. Mm-hmm. And I got 335 pounds. Mm-hmm. I was eating corn dogs and burritos.
Yep.
Whatever I could get.
Yep.
Pop in, two burritos, a corn dog. You know?
Yeah.
You go, and then when I started bodybuilding and training, I would go to the store and look around for something that was healthy.
Right.
It would be a bag of almonds or whatever and a bottle of water.
Right, right, so, right.
You go to, you buy a salad, you're paying three times more than a burger.
This is what I don't understand, you know, and it's true what you're saying about all these fast food restaurants. You start with a fast food restaurant, you go out there, all right, you get a whole meal combo for under $10 or $9 maybe, whatever. If you're getting a whole combo meal with something, it's the greasy food.
You can eat Applebee's for $15.99 or Chili's or whatever it is.
We're going after the podcast.
Chili's? look it up. It's like two or three items, but it's all you can eat for $15.99.
Really?
But you're trying to tell me they can't serve you a salad? One salad to make it, you know. So I went from 330 pounds to a bodybuilder, and I went down to 4% body fat.
Wow.
I had a car accident, I was hit by a drunk driver, and then I gained all the weight back. And then that's when the problem started. 7 herniated discs, high blood pressure, you know, even anxiety and depression, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about that in our community. I think in the Hispanic community, I think we should be talking about talk therapy. My mm-hmm. daughter went to school for psychology, and I preach that, man. Talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to a counselor. Don't just mask it. Don't play with your health.
Right.
It's something that we could all do.
Yeah, and like I was saying, like you go to these restaurants, fast food restaurants, you get these combos, whatever, like what you just said. And you know what? I'm done with this. I'm gonna try to eat healthy. I'm gonna go out, get myself all the healthy food that I need to get at home. You end up wasting close to $100-something just to get something healthy. And you get alone, you go to a restaurant and you try to eat healthier there too. It's like the healthy food is more expensive than the damn junk food.
You'll be at the grocery store three times a week because you'll run out of something if you're trying to cook at home.
Mm-hmm.
I did 4 bodybuilding shows, and I won one in the radio. But I had to do 6 meals a day mm-hmm. for 16 weeks straight. I had to cook them myself. I had to eat it, prepare it, and I would run out of chicken or fish or whatever. I would go back to the, you know, to the grocery store. And it was so expensive. I could have spend a fraction of that on burritos and whatever. And I was 4% body fat with abs and everything else. Ripped.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures. If you go to his Facebook page, you see the fat.
Like,
yeah.
They're like the Dallas Cowboys Super Bowl. They're only on VHS. I'm a huge Cowboys fan, and that's the joke that everybody tells me.
Uh-oh.
49ers.
You're cooked.
When was the last time y'all made
it? Let's just drop the subject, all right?
Hold on. You guys won a Super Bowl the year before we did, so your Super Bowl is older than ours.
There you go.
But the thing is, like, you're going to find out what salary cap hell is. You just paid Brock Purdy $53 million and Fred Warner, too. They just paid him. All the free agents that left.
You're going to feel what the Cowboys are feeling right now with Dak Prescott.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah. And the thing is, like.
Yeah. I hear you, man.
But
oh, my God.
Already.
I'm leaving.
49ers what?
No. So that's what got me into the storytelling.
Right.
So I wanted to tell my story, and I wanted to convince my daughter to become a doctor.
Okay.
And I go to medical school. It's like, it's so hard. You never did anything difficult in your life. You're just an X-ray tech and blah, blah. Just like, you're just an X-ray tech.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm going to prove it to you. I'm going to do something that will take lots of guts.
Mm-hmm.
And I enrolled in a school, a night school for writing.
Okay.
And
okay.
It was called Tell My Story or something.
Mm-hmm.
It was put on by a theater group. And every week we'd meet and we'd write our own short film.
Mm-hmm.
You can do whatever you wanted. You can do a claymation, stop motion animation. You can do drawing, whatever. But you got to tell a story with words and another medium.
Okay.
And so I said, I want to make a film. So I went in there. There was a mixer. And I was telling everybody about a crime drama, the next Godfather, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then I told them a real story, a true story. I have a collection of odd jobs that will curl your skin. I was a grave digger.
Mm.
A grave digger for a funeral home.
Ow.
No.
We dug a grave in Blue Town one night on Halloween Eve,
mm-hmm.
and we started finding bones in the dirt.
Oh,
so
shit.
Obviously, the cemetery got overrun with weeds, and so the farmer just plowed it. And all those old graves from the olden times,
oh my gosh,
they just resold them, but they didn't know. You know, because, like, it's a small town.
Right, right.
The paperwork wasn't as, you know, thorough.
Right.
They didn't have computers to, you know, like,
right.
Where does this... So my buddy's like, this is a hand bone, man. This is a carpal. Here's a metacarpal. I studied the x-rays.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go back. Let's come back tomorrow morning. And so we had to come back in the morning. The funeral's almost on its way. And we finished the grave right before that. And so one day we get a call and... I used to live with my neighbors and work for them.
Mm-hmm.
When I had my bad boy era, I got kicked out of the house,
mm-hmm.
and I went out on my own. I ended up two houses down from my parents.
Those chihuahuas.
They could see me. They could see me from my house.
He still kept tabs on me.
A ver, déjalo, hombre.
Hey, te bañaste. But I started hanging out with these guys locally. Had their own funeral. And that was kind of the business.
Right.
They took me in because I was a bad boy. I knew everything.
Yeah.
So they said, you're going to have to work. You're going to be living in this house. You have to work. The
exactly.
The business is...
Grave digging.
No, it's funeral.
Oh, funeral.
You did
sorry.
Everything.
Yeah,
you
gotcha.
It didn't have to be the funeral. Like, that grave digging. We could do funeral. We could, you know, do everything else.
Mm-hmm.
They did it all. So one day we get a call. And we're sitting outside. And we get a call. And they had a hearse that was to pick up with us.
Oh, gosh.
And we get a car and we go all the way out to Mission. Mr. Calazos, Jim Fossil Spencer, he's gone. He had, like, the kindest heart that you could possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm.
He had a reputation for being a caring individual. So anybody ends up in the river or somewhere, they find a body they can't identify, it's called the jungle.
Right? Right.
You all know that.
Right.
But the county only pays a certain amount of money to process that money, or to put it in the grave and mark that grave.
Right.
So any funeral home will lose money on a jumbo because there's paperwork and there's you got a plot and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they knew that Mr. Cavazos would take it because he couldn't bear the thought of somebody not knowing where their family member was or whatever. He would always help. So this funeral home asked Mr. Cavazos if we would take care of this process. And we went to pick up a body. And me and my friend Willie and Jaime, we went in the hearse and we picked up this body. It was a floater from the river, Randy. No documentation. He was like banging in the current. He had like scars all over and stuff. And they treated this body like really bad, inhumane.
Right.
And my buddy Willie, told me, this is not how you run a funeral business. You know, you're thinking of this person as a line item on your budget.
Right.
You know, do the work, right. Do it the right way, and the benefits will come. So we go and he makes them give us a casket for him. They had him in a plastic bag.
The Gerties? Yeah.
Did they give us a casket, like a traveling casket, you know, the ones that we put on the plane? Mm-hmm. And we bring him home and we went to dig the grave, and Mr. Gossett came out and he did a little ceremony and did all the paperwork. Mm-hmm. And then we covered him up and we marked it. And then, you know, I went home to my friends. Started writing a poem about John Doe. And I connected the dots. How did he end up here? Why did he come? So I wrote a narrative of what would compel a human to risk his life for a better life. Like, nobody will ever know what happened to him.
Exactly.
Started doing research. It's not just here, it's every border town.
Right.
From Tijuana to Monterrey. You know, there's instances, instances in like in Arizona where they have hundreds of graves that nobody knows who they are.
Yeah.
And they have like lockers with their belongings, and people will go there and look through the stuff to see if they can identify this person, right? So I wrote a story. My first short film was called John Doe. It was a fictional story about a guy who couldn't rest until he found out who this person was.
Oh, okay.
I've been in the fire department. I've been in all kinds of things where I've seen dead bodies. Mm-hmm. But there's always a story in the paper. There's always like a funeral. There's always something to tell you that this is the end of the story. Mm-hmm. This was, this was open, left open. It was no closure. At the beginning, it was called closure. I needed closure. The end of the character. And so in the story, there's a girl. She's also looking for her loved one. And he has one little bracelet that he never took off.
Okay.
And so my character calls the diplomat, the Mexican consulate.
Right, right.
And tells them, fills out a report. We found this John Doe. This is what he weighed. And, ballpark. And he had this red ribbon, red bracelet. And so she's looking for that. And some worker at the consulate puts two and two together and puts my character and the wife together, and I show her where he's buried so that she can know where he lives. Right?
Yeah, more like closure. So.
And so I told that story at that mixer at the school, and I had 30 people listening to that because it was
brutal. Right now, you got me intrigued. I really want to see this movie.
I didn't even realize you were so talking about this film. I was just like, you're telling me a story.
Yeah. I was like, man, I want to make my crime drama so bad and nobody wants to hear it, but like the story's
real.
And that's what acting is. It's when it looks real, that's when it's like legit.
Right.
You know, it's believable, you know? And so I want to have a mix of truth and fiction. The bad guys in this movie, the strong side, they have a dark past, you know? They were bootleggers back in the day. There's an era in the valley called the Hour of Blood. I don't know if you've heard of it.
No, it's the first time.
From 1910 to 1920, the Texas Texas Rangers mandate. And this is not me making it up. There's in Austin at the museum, there's articles about it. There's all this stuff about it. They were sent down here to take land from Mexican farmers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they violated the treaty that they signed when Santa Ana gave up the Alamo, the San Antonio, the Mexican Revolution, all that stuff.
They
signed the treaty saying, we give up, we're going back to Mexico, you won Texas, but what we want, Mexico said this, it's in the treaty. We don't want anybody who stays in Texas to be treated badly because of their Mexican descent.
Right.
And the San Juan Hotel housed Texas Rangers.
Yes.
And there's a big controversy about it because they want to preserve it. They want to pump some money into it. Mm-hmm. But that's where the head of the Texas Rangers lived.
Yeah.
And they hung people in the courtyard.
Yes, they did.
There's a book, Mr. Howell from Mercedes, I don't remember his first name. He wrote a book called Your Land or Your Life. And on the cover, there's three campesinos, farmers, in that couch getting hung by the Texas Rangers. So when they're in my movie, this family, they betray all of their community, all their neighbors, basically help these people take lands from them. And in the story, that's why they're cursed. That's why they'll never succeed. They're tainted. It's like stepping on an Indian burial ground.
Yeah, I got you.
It's gonna stay with you.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that's what I wanted to do. Put a little truth into my movies, but still be an escape. You know, this is a story about a hero. All that stuff is all his trials and tribulations that he's got to get through to get to the other side, to win. You know, the story's fake, but some of the circumstances are real. You know,
that's crazy, man. I mean, I do know what you're talking about as far as that itself, about the whole Ranger thing and coming to a special...
Is that the first time I talked about this on the air? Yeah. Or in public?
Yeah.
I wrote a feature film called Los Tequileros.
Okay.
Your a Valley Prohibition story. And it won a pitch festival competition, or a script competition. And it's just that it's a period piece. It's going to be high budget just to have... the wardrobe, the car, it's from Prohibition time.
Yeah.
So it's like the Untouchables meets
Right.
But this city has a history. Al Capone had a house here. There's a little town called... I was on a roll and I forgot the name of the town. There would have been a mic drop moment, but I messed it up. So some farmers dynamited the Rio Grande and a town, the Rio Grande skewed, and this American town, border town, stayed on the other side. And people will probably know what it's called, I forget. It's like Tierra Dulce, Agua Dulce, or something like that.
Okay.
Anyway, all the people fled back to America, and all their houses stayed behind, and so they did a bunch of brothels and casinos. And they say that that's where Al Capone's people would go cross and make their deals for bootlegging. And my great-grandmother, she said that my great-grandfather used to ride with Macho Libre, and that they would bootleg back in the day. Here in Westico, before Westico was incorporated, she would walk from farm to farm with buckets of beer and sabo and tequila. That was what my grandma said. I don't have any. My grandma passed.
Got the FBI watching now, buddy.
Maybe they can trace some of my assets. Maybe there's a ranch there somewhere here that nobody knows. It's pretty mine. And so it's history.
Yeah.
And it's our history. It's never been told. Mm. And so in my story, you have bootleggers, Pancho Villa, Al Capone, the Texas Rangers, in a story that could be compelling, to tell a different version of what we've heard.
Right.
You know, our history books don't talk about a lot of things. Mm. You know, they tell us what they want to tell us.
Right.
You know, and now with the death of DEI, you know, we might not tell us.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I hear you. there's so much stuff going on in the world, bro, and especially in our own backyard. It's hard to even not live with the fact that it's happening itself. You know what I mean? And if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and the thing is that in the school systems growing up, you don't know this because you're super young. They used to tell us not to speak Spanish. Yeah. And our parents would not be involved in our schools because they were out there working. My mom worked full-time and went to night school. My dad worked in the field. He was field mechanic for agriculture, and he worked 50 hours a week. You know, we're all four boys living at home. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw our parents like for an hour right before we went to bed. So the TV and the school system raised us. And the school system would tell us not to speak Spanish if we didn't have to, because it could put you in a different class called ESL. English as a second language. And you would be left behind.
Yeah.
You would get, your curriculum was just English stuff, and you would get left behind. So the teachers encourage us not to talk Spanish.
Yeah.
Don't use slang, because you're going to stick with it. Now, it's like we're no Sabo kids.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know if you know who Maritza and La Esencia is. They were here about a year ago. They got what's that word you guys use? Shut down, not shut down, but they boycotted. What's that popular word?
I don't know. Ella?
That's a word that means like canceled.
Yeah, canceled.
Canceled. They got canceled going to Mexico and not being able to speak Spanish.
Oh wow.
If you look at them, and they're my color. Mm-hmm. But their parents in the fields from sun up to sundown, and they're being raised by the school system.
Right.
And they told the Mexican public, I don't like Chile. I like hot wings. You know, like I like chicken nuggets.
Yeah,
I got you. And they made fun of them, and they basically lost from 14 million Spotify listeners to like 3 overnight. Wow. And they lambasted them for being no Sabo kids. But it's a system that tells us not to want to be bicultural.
I got you. You know,
and I would go through that. Remember, you've seen Selena, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Selena had that moment where she stumbled and she couldn't say the word right. And everybody laughed it off because she was cute and she was spunky. Mm-hmm. But these kids were left out there with no manager, no parent at all. They're all minors.
Just ate them up.
Ate them up.
Yeah.
I think it's harder even like that. Social media is such a big thing. You can easily just unfollow. And then change
everything. And then spread. Like, they tried to cancel Grupo Frontera. Mm-hmm. Because one of the grandparents was posting election results. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, I think everybody has their opinion. Like, why are you trying to cancel a group or a person, an artist, but you have family members that are on both sides of the political spectrum? Yeah. You don't cancel your cousin. You know, I'm on a group chat with a 30-year-old. It's a group chat of our high school reunion, a 30-year group.
Okay.
We met for the 30th, and we created this group. Mm-hmm. Half are Republicans and half are Democrats.
Right.
I don't shut them out. I try to educate and try to communicate.
Right.
But that's what we don't do anymore.
No.
It's like this side versus that side. Yeah. It's like, you're a 49er, I'm a cowboy, and you don't want to hear my side. I don't want to hear your side.
Yeah.
But that's dangerous because this is politics.
Yeah.
This is our livelihood. This is our future.
Yeah.
This is everything that we, as American citizens, came to love about America. Mm-hmm. You know, due process and all those things.
Right.
And I can talk about this. Why did you get so political? Like,
and that's the same thing I was telling Josh in the last episode. It's weird, man, because through the years growing up, I never saw the news. I never was into the political thing. And then when you get into your mid-40s, early 40s, you're like, okay, what's going on over here? It's what's going on? You know, I never used to watch this stuff. And now I'm like knee-deep in it. I'm like, why?
I was always fascinated with that. Mm-hmm. You remember Oliver North?
Yeah.
Do you remember what that was about?
The whole thing, no.
It was about coke and guns.
Okay.
They got caught. The American government, the army branch, and the CIA got caught bringing guns, selling guns for drugs in the Iran-Contra affair. Mm-hmm. Iran and the Contras have nothing to do with themselves. Iran's in the Middle East. the Contras in South America. But this is an initiative, and that's why a lot of popular urban artists, they call them that, they said that the streets were flooded with cocaine in the 80s because they needed to get rid of it.
Right.
You know? Oliver North took the stand, and he said he didn't know anything, but Pablo Escobar was involved. If you watch like the shows Narcos,
yeah,
even the cartoon Archer,
yeah,
they have episodes, entire episodes of how the government got caught,
right,
with guns,
guns and drugs. Yeah.
I said, how are you gonna tell me not to do? You asked me to ask for the what's the Pledge of Allegiance say? Freedom and liberty. But then when I want it, as an adult, you say I can't have it. You like lie to me. This
right? Way. Yeah, I hear you. You know? I hear you.
You can't ask for free health care, but yet you know a president can accept a private plane. You know, we're gonna cut. We have to get on.
Yeah. Well, we're an hour and 5 minutes in. We're already towards the end
let's
of the podcast.
Let's talk politics, but let's talk something that's in our wheelhouse.
Yeah.
There's a legislation that passed the House, SB 22, that brings incentives for film. Mm-hmm. You know? So every blossoming film community that has this incentive is booming. Mm-hmm. Louisiana, Georgia, all of these states that give filmmakers back a piece of what they spent, mm-hmm, and they're actually halfway there to passing into Texas. So if we were to do that, it'd be a great time to be a filmmaker. It needs to pass in the Senate. So there's an Instagram page called Media for Texas.
Okay.
Look it up. Give them a follow, and they're going to start writing letters and stuff to the politicians. They have Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey have a YouTube video. Look it up. Talking about, they remade one of the scenes from True Detective.
Okay. I think so, yeah.
And they remade it, and they're talking about how Texas is going to be the next Hollywood.
Yeah.
And they mentioned McAllen in the video. Mm-hmm. You know, you watch a movie and they talk about McAllen, and some line producer and they're like, why are we going to fly 30 people to McAllen if all we got to do is slap a name on the bus? You know, we did that in Sicario.
Yeah.
Supposedly they're in McAllen.
Right.
But you can see the border wall.
Yeah.
That's like, wait a minute. There was a movie from Brownsville or somewhere else, and there's mountains in the golf course.
Yes.
And with it.
Yeah.
But that's a line item, and like a decision like that can save you tens of thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every day that you hire an actor is XYZ amount of money.
Right.
And every day he has to spend to get there is one day. And every day he has to spend to get back is another day.
Yeah.
So you hire a guy at $5,000 a day, and he's working 2 days. That's $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got to fly here, and that's one day. And if you don't pay him, you can tell the union, and the union can shut you down.
Right.
You know? So we have to make it more effective to make film in the valley than South Texas. You know? So that line producer will say, well, we could really tell an awesome story, mm-hmm, and it's cost effective to bring a crew of 20 or 5, and we can outsource to regular people down there that, you know, like Citrus Digital. Shout out to Citrus Digital and Isaac. We're creating a motion picture subcommittee. It could be trying to look for a group. We're developing this group to lure investors, to get people more involved in filmmaking, to see it as a business. There's a lot of investors here.
There's quite a few, yeah.
New car washes pop up every day.
Jeez.
Restaurants have some of the worst profitability margins out there, but they still take a risk.
Yeah.
And in 3 months, 4 months, you see that restaurant, you know, it's gone. You know?
Yeah.
But they could invest in a movie.
That's true.
And invest in that movie, invest in your community, and then see residuals for the life of that movie, mm-hmm, in perpetuity. We're not here to make a movie to sell it to somebody. We're here to make a movie to own the rights to them.
I got you, yeah.
You're familiar with Rick Ross and 50 Cent?
Not so much.
I'm a little bit like all over the place.
I can see that.
And so 50 Cent and Rick Ross have a beef online. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it comes up on my feed. And so Rick Ross got outed for not being a gangster, like he said he was.
Oh, okay.
He's a security guard.
Right.
And so 50 Cent lets him have it. He's like, you're fake and blah, blah, blah. So Rick Ross came back and said, who owns your masters? I'll buy your masters. You know?
Right.
That's how you become wealthy. By owning your content. Now imagine if your YouTube, when your YouTube show gets really popular, that somebody owned 90% of it.
90%.
That would be sad. Right? So we're trying to put ourselves in the driver's seat. I'm going to own, I wrote contracts. I have two movies that are really in production. I wrote contracts and I hired these people and they signed that 80% of the merchandising for the horror movie is mine. Before we even shoot it, you know, any investor knows if there's a doll, a toy, whatever, because the horror movie, the one that's after this movie, is huge. It's got 20 Hollywood actors attached to it. And I can say this because I have a letter of intent. A letter of intent is basically a marketing tool. I can go out and try to find money and say who is in the show, right? And who's going to be in the movie. So my monster for the horror movie has been in Smile. He's been in Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Mysteries or Curiosities. I always get that one. He signed to a huge movie. I can't say the name of it because it's not.
Okay.
But I can basically show an investor that letter. I have 20 letters like that for the horror movie. And I have an idea of merchandise. You know, I'll pay myself a little bit to make this movie, but I'm after the merchandising. You know, the horror niche, the horror genre, I mean, they love hard goods. Posters, caps,
yes.
The physical DVD.
Yep.
The writer, Orlando, he had the idea to put the movie inside a lunchbox for all the 80s geeks, you know, a lunchbox.
You sold me.
A lunchbox.
You freaking sold me.
Of the movie, you open it and the DVD's inside.
That's badass.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's what we were trying to do is keep that royalty.
Right.
You know, there's movies made in the Valley all the time, but you don't know them because they come in and do them here. You know, like that Netflix Christmas movie. We won't say which one.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember.
I know what you're talking about.
The one with Luis Fonsi. They're trying to sell it in Cannes. That was Patrick Brothers. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Those are steps to getting to where we want to be. You know? So that's what I'm telling you. The industry.
Right.
Like, we want to give you royalties for that movie.
Oh, you come across that, you shoot us that area where they're doing the position for that law?
It's called Media for Texas on Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah, Media for Texas. Oh, and then also, I wrote a part for you. I told you.
I know. I was telling Chu, I go, hey, man, Abel said that he might have a part for us, and supposedly you just got to... Oh, you just show up with your leg and you'll be all right. You don't have to actually be on the film. It's just going to be me. I'm the one that has the line. You just bring the leg, pretend you're there. So
no,
not a big
not.
Deal.
So in the strong side, we're going full bore with it.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be TV coverage of this blue chip athlete signing. Like, we're going to have cameras at the signing day. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a big deal. And you'll be like the sports talk version of like ESPN, and you're all excited and talking about it. And it's a way to move the story forward because what's the big deal? He's just a guy. No, but this never happens. You never get a 5-star blue chip
in a small town like this. Exactly.
You know, and there's two more of them. So this is, you know, these are reinforcements, and maybe we're turning the corner. And it's kind of like art imitating life, because that's where we are at in the valley. The ETRGV Vaqueros.
Yep, finally.
They hosted the tournament. They got bounced out of the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
But when was the last time that they hosted a tournament in Edinburgh for a national conference?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they can still get into the College World Series, I think, if the committee says they won 23 games, they might get an invite.
Right.
I'm not 100% sure that's how it works.
Yeah.
But I love to watch, you know, these triumph clips.
The underdogs, pretty much. The underdog story.
The underdogs, because, and this is so, so cool that, like, they're like, when they break the huddle and they do the thing, like, hey, team.
Yeah.
They say Valley Boys. It's so weird. Like, they're not Valley Boys. They're not all of them.
You're not even from here.
Stop being a hater, man. But that's so cool. Like, yeah. And that brings me to, like, another thing. Like, why do I get political? Why do I get, because I travel a lot.
Mm.
And I don't fit in anywhere. I went to see my daughter graduate in Mississippi. And it's... like, what are you? What do you mean, what am I? It's like, you're not Arab, are you?
Yeah. Oh, like, gosh.
I'm like,
how many times have I heard that?
You have?
Yes.
It's because, it's like some European traits that got mixed in with mestizos. Like, I like the colored eyes and the nose. Mm-hmm. I don't have, like, the traditional Mexican-American features. Like, there's some Mexican-Americans that can't grow a full beard. Like, they'll look very indigenous and stuff. And, mm-hmm. and it's like, you're just all over the place. You got the dark skin, the colored eyes, and you don't speak Spanish. Like, well, I speak Spanish. Well, why don't, like, I'm speaking English to you. I don't think I have an accent. I have an accent in Spanish, mm-hmm. you know. I'm Pocho. That's what the word is, right?
Yes, it is.
And I grew up... watching like India Maria. I don't know if you know.
Yes,
Maria.
I do know who the India Maria is.
Ni de aquí, ni de allá.
Yeah.
I go up, that Austin, Houston, LA, whatever.
Yep.
I don't fit in.
Yeah. No de aquí.
I go to Mexico, to where my family's from. I don't fit in.
To de allá.
Where am I supposed to?
That's what the movie's about.
Yeah. And so getting back to Yaritza and her Esencia, the band,
mm-hmm.
I went through that. Mm-hmm. Your kids, they shoved a bunch of cameras in their face, and they're like, the chicken nugget kid, look it up. They're the chicken nuggets. That's what they call them.
Wow.
You know, they make memes and they put AI over their voices and stuff. They're super talented. Wow. They have a song with Grupo Frontera. Mm-hmm. It's really good. On their place. I love it, you know. And I would go to my house. My dad used to have a house in Guadalajara, he sold it to my cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And we go there, and I hated the food over there, man. I hated tortas ahogadas, and where's the breakfast, man? Like, where's the bacon and egg? I want a cute taco.
Bien americano, chingada madre.
They have cute tacos. They don't eat flour tortillas in Mexico.
No, they don't.
They don't eat breakfast. They eat, coffee and a pan dulce, and then they have lunch and the merienda, and then dinner's, like, at 7 o'clock on the street. They go to eat tacos in the street.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that's too late. I'm going to eat. I need, like, my aunt would make me. She would go to the store.
You're right.
And buy eggs. And she, because she would come and go.
Right.
She lived here half her life and half her there.
Right.
Right now she's in Chicago. So okay. She gets it. Right. She would, like, placate to us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started learning, like, oh, shit. This is, like, you know, different. Now I love chilaquiles. Now I love all the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But I grew up on like, potato and egg.
There you go.
And we never had weenie and egg because we're so poor. Like, weenies were for hot dogs.
Right.
You don't cut up a weenie to make it into the egg. You know, use potato for that.
You're right,
use
right.
For that. The hot dog, we're going to grill it for you with the fajitas paquillenes, cabrón.
Yeah.
We don't put that in the egg, but a lot of people do.
Yeah. Ooh,
that's cool. But yeah, man, I was like, now that I go, because we go every year. We go every year, and we're still the Pochos. But now we have an appreciation.
Right.
My cousin got married as a charro. You know?
Okay.
With the whole get up. And his wife, they met in folklorico dancing. And they were part of the Guinness Book of World Records biggest folklorico ensemble ever put together. Like, 1,000 people. So they got married in Guadalajara, right in the middle of Guadalajara. And then they went to the conference center where they have the actual violet,
mm-hmm.
and they performed for us.
Oh, okay.
She got dressed into a folklorico outfit, and she did like 8 numbers with the mariachis, doing traditional Mexican, the hat dance, and all that mm-hmm. stuff. And I filmed it all. I have it. You know, I'll put it up on YouTube someday. But it's like, yeah, man, this is the stuff that we missed out on. I'm also writing a one-act play. I know I'm over with this. I'm writing a one-act play about my dad called Cuffin Donuts.
Okay.
My dad was born in El Sur, Texas. Mm-hmm. And then at 2-3 years old, he went back to Guadalajara. And then he came back as a teenager. And he had to go to school and work. Mm-hmm. And then when he was old enough, he went to Wisconsin to work in the smelting.
Okay.
Iron. You know, we didn't know this till last week.
Oh,
like, we're learning stuff about my dad because I'm telling you, now he has time to chill. Now he's retired.
Right.
He had an accident with raw iron, like, it hit on his head. Like, he woke up in the hospital and stuff, and we didn't even know till like last week. We were looking at my brother, like, where did this come from?
Right,
like,
right.
A couple of colds. And so, I'm writing a story about my dad and his brothers, there's three of them, in the hills of Jalisco, saying, hey man, you're American citizens. Let's just go get jobs. One of them's planning a wedding, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know. So I'm writing a story, a one-act play about how they decided to come and change my life. I went back to that little ranchito 3 years ago, in the middle of tequila country. It's beautiful, man. It's nice and fresh, the dirt, it's like, there's no pesticides. You know that Mexico won't let their farmers put pesticides in corn? Because people are going to eat it.
Right.
If you try to import corn from here, they won't want it because it's pesticides.
It's pesticide.
You know, it's going to end up in a tortilla, you know?
Right, right, right.
So, I picture a world where my dad doesn't decide, I imagine this world where my dad doesn't decide to come. He stays in Mexico his whole life. Mm-hmm. I'm at the ghetto on the street. You know, I'm doing something with that. Because what else would I do? You know, I love to cook.
Right.
And so in that story, it goes from what really happened, my dad leaving Jalisco to pursue a better life, and what happens when he decides not to. And he's working in Mexico, and I grow up in Mexico, and, you know, all the things that I could choose to be or not.
Right.
Bringing us back to the morality test.
My mind just goes. You're going. I'm already about an hour 21 in.
I'm feeling 30 minutes.
No, but as far as anything else, man, first of all, I know I'm going to have to wrap this up already. It's already coming past an hour. But as far as the movie is concerned, we're calling it, what is it called? The Strong Side. When is, can you give us a little bit of an update? This is coming out? And all that, your social media that they can look for.
Axiom Films on Facebook, AXIOM. It's a new page. It's a little hard to find right now because I just put it up about 2 weeks ago. We're going to shoot in late September.
Okay.
The process to get authorized takes 2 months. And you have to have a percentage of the money in escrow to get it authorized. So May, June, July is fundraising time. August and late September. August is like pre-production, and then late September we're gonna shoot.
Okay.
That's what the goal is.
Okay. And they can find this on your Facebook page if they want to follow.
Axiom Films will have all the details.
Okay.
How they can get involved? How they can get the sides? Okay. That's a professional term.
Okay.
When they say, "Did you get the sides?" It's your pages. Just what you're going to read for your audition.
You're talking to a gordito. I'm thinking food.
So I'm educated.
You're talking to a gordito.
Did you get your sides? I'm like, I'm more of an entree guy. And then, no, food, the script, the pieces of script, they're called sides.
Oh, okay, my bad.
No,
but if we're going to lunch, right?
Yeah, I'm mashed potatoes. You got them.
Guys, if you see the film right now, I got a... Mr. Gonzalez del Toro's cue card right there. You click on that, a QR code. That'll take you straight to him. All the good stuff that he's coming across and what he's doing in the future, man.
One audition, that's where you're going to find the information.
There you go, guys.
Audition, how you can get... Yeah. You ever wanted to be in a movie? You want to learn how to do the behind-the-scenes stuff? You know,
that's where you're going to learn. First things first, I want to say thank you, man, for coming out, having some fun with me. It's like every time I have him on the pod, the times that I've had him, the first time, the second time, the third time, it's like storytelling. You know, I feel like a kindergartner sitting on the rug.
I was getting lost in the storytelling about it, and I was like...
If I could just translate it to film, I think I could, you know, make a living off of it. But that's been the challenge. I had to learn cameras, microphones, editing. Awesome. I don't want to do that, man. I just want to write the story. But I do. I have to end up editing, color grading. I've been director of photography for other movies that weren't even mine.
Right.
I've been second cameraman for documentaries and do all this stuff.
Right.
But all I want to do is tell my story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said before, I want to say thank you for coming out, man. I appreciate you coming out. Maybe when this movie is already out, I'd love to have you come back and talk about it. And hopefully things work out. Yeah. It'll come out on your movie as the ESPN announcer. You know, see, I can grow my hair of a fro or something so I can look really freaky out.
There's an ESPN announcer just got signed yesterday from Edinburgh.
Really?
Yeah, she's doing all of the online betting stuff. She's very, very skilled in...
She's a bookie!
She probably did the babla and she was like,
oh, man.
You know what I'm talking about?
Put up numbers. No. Let's not go into that. Let's not go into that because I am being monetized right now.
No, it's legal. Betting is legal, you know? And she does all that, all the stats for this stuff.
Well, I'll have to look her up, man. I'll find out all the... Know what numbers to use and what numbers not to use for that. For the coming up football season, man.
Don't be afraid, man. They do it. It's called the line. They've been doing it for Vegas forever.
Yeah.
And then maybe she can come on and she'll have a cowboy hat on.
Oh, there you go.
Dallas Cowboys.
I'll make sure she comes on and she'll have a Niner hat on.
All right, guys.
That'll be interesting. No, thank you again, Emo. Appreciate you so much, man. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the podcast tonight. An hour and 25 minutes. Hey, you wanted some media? We got some media for you. I want to say thank you to Miss Ella Rose over here. Look at fashioning the caps and everything for us and everything.
Buy some merchandise, guys. Yeah. It looks as cool as us.
There you go. Now, and good luck. Be careful on your way back to Texas Tech. I hope when you come back again, we have another great guest so you can enjoy yourself again. Because I know she is going forward to become in journalism. Bad person to teach. Anyways, journalism, and I hope everything goes well for you when you go back to Tech. And say hi to all your friends from us down here in the valley, especially Miss Katie.
Yes,
hi, Katie! She loves me, misses the food down here. But we will be back again with you guys next week, Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. with Stephanie Nadolny, Miss Kid Goku herself. I got a lot of questions for her because now she's on the new episodes. So that should be a lot of fun to watch. If you catch the live, you'll watch it live free. If not, then you gotta be a member to watch it when it's already recorded, guys. Other than that, man, any last words?
No, bye.
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 Bye. Bye.
No,
we'll see you next week, guys. Ladies, gators, peace out.